Her Excellency Hilda Hein, President of Republic of Marshall Islands. You
Thank
have
you.
The floor.
Thank you so much. Excellencies, Head of Delegations, Director General and Deputy Director General of FAO, ministers and members of crop agencies, ladies and gentlemen. The FAO is increasingly becoming a major partner for Marshall Islands and the rest of the Pacific. In 2016 and again this year in 2017, we declared national disaster as a result of prolonged drought. The FAO's support was crucial for our recovery efforts, along with other donor agencies. If it wasn't for them, the impacts would have been much worse and lives may have been lost. These droughts have had major or massive impact on our communities. The economic impact, for example, in 2016 alone was $4.9 million, which is a significant amount of our GDP. Our small but important agriculture sector was hit the hardest, shouldering about a third of this. Our story is increasingly becoming the Pacific story and that of our island friends beyond. We have all been hit by droughts or cyclones that have a long-term impact than the news cycle captures, often decimating crops and impacting our water lenses in ways that make it even harder to bounce back. This new normal of living under the threats of climate change has and will add to the problems facing the country, constraining its development efforts. RMA faces a myriad of problems common to small island economies associated with smallness and remoteness. The most critical include high food security vulnerability, chronic health problems associated with high prevalence of NCDs, as well as extremely high population density and high youth unemployment. Tackling these problems have been very difficult under normal times and have become vexing in the face of climate change. But they must be combated in order to improve the welfare of the people of the Marshall Islands. They demand innovative approaches that are attuned to the new normal created by climate change. The Marshall Islands need to develop policies, plans, and practices that are attuned and resilient to climate change. RMI accepts that adaptation measures should not only address the direct impacts of climate change, but also their flow-on effects on the economy and society. In addition to food security challenges that we face, we also have challenge with fresh water. In the Marshall Islands, like many of the Pacific Islands, we rely on the rain to provide our drinking water. During drought, groundwater on our small islands or smallest islands is completely depleted, and over half of our islands are considered highly vulnerable as a result. And at times of inundation and increasingly frequent occurrence, our water sources become contaminated with salt water. This was the case in our capital city just recently when we had the drought. The FAO's support to help us build a more resilient food supply has been critical, but we need to ensure that FAO can be more proactive. We cannot afford to wait for disaster to take hold before we mobilize and act. By then, our people are already hungry, our crops are already damaged, and our water already drying up. By then also, all we are doing is putting a Band-Aid on an increasingly infected wound. We also need to ensure that FAO's support is going where it is needed. For example, we have our own joint national adaptation plan for climate change and disaster risk management. We need that that help us to provide a framework for the immediate recovery effort. This is our resilient strategy, and we need support from our donor partners to make or implement that plan. In the longer term, we hope that the 2050 strategy for both mitigation and adaptation, which we are developing, will provide the same kind of framework. This is still very much under development and provides a good opportunity for us to think about and address many of the aspects we have discussed today. I invite the FAO to be a partner in that process, and in a partner in a roundtable we hope to convene next year following its launch. I also invite FAO to establish an office in the North Pacific so that we can avail of your technical assistance more readily. With that, thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam President, for your insights on the challenge you face, calling us to be more innovative in our approaches and calling upon FAO to work on prevention and recovery, not only on the response to the response. Also inviting FAO to be part of the roundtable next year. The DG is here. I am sure he took note on your challenge and your needs. Then, who would like to take the floor next? As I said, it's a very informal discussion. I don't want to call upon Samoa. Madam Vice Prime Minister, would like to take the floor?
Your Excellencies and colleagues, I'm very mindful that this is an opportunity for Pacific leaders to meet with the leadership of FAO. Recalling especially that Samoa was the most recent host of the leaders' meeting, I just wanted to underscore the fact that the leaders have decided that climate change and fisheries shall remain as an ongoing issue for the leaders. I think this reflects the commitment of the regional leadership to sustainable development and the conservation of our ocean resources in particular. This prioritizing by our leaders is also reflected in the new Blue Pacific narrative. It is a tenet that consolidates our approach, which we want to continue on to the COP23 consultations in Bonn. We'd also like to call on the full elaboration of the Paris Agreement under our framework for the Pacific in the areas of resilience, and especially for the interim partnerships working towards the implementation of that framework. We, of course, would like the support from FAO in the areas mentioned of sustainable development, climate change, and, of course, the fisheries. As I note, you also spoke Director General, in particular to the illegal fishing in the region. This is a great concern for all of us. It is not a new issue. I think Dame Meg also alluded to the work that has already been taken on board through our Pacific agencies. And of course, we welcome the initiatives through FAO and also combating this area. I note that Director General, you make specific mention that Samoa has signed but has not ratified. This is a work in progress, but we do see it as a very important concern and priority for all of us in the Pacific. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Madam Deputy Prime Minister. Calling upon the support of FAO on the implementation of the Paris Agreement, sustainable development, and also on fisheries, as it has been already strengthened by the Director General.
Oh, please, while I have the floor, I'm just reminded by my colleagues here, we just recently hosted the Breadfruit Summit in Samoa with the assistance from FAO. This is an initiative that has excited many of us in the region. We see it not only in terms of food security, but also in product development for export and in assisting, of course, the better resilience in terms of providing lasting livelihoods for the Pacific people. And we'd just like to tell everyone while we're all here, Samoa, apparently, we have the best breadfruit for making into flour. So if any of you would like some of our breadfruit, just let us know and we can make an arrangement. Ah, yes, and it's gluten-free, yes.
Thank you very much. I think we exhausted the ladies in this dialogue. Who would like to be next? I just came back from the Pacific Week on Agriculture in Vanuatu, where I had the pleasure to meet His Excellency, the Prime Minister, Honorable Charlotte Tabi Masmas. Prime Minister, you have the floor. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Director General, Deputy Director, Excellencies, ladies and gentlemen. Firstly, may I take this opportunity to congratulate FAO, through you, Mr. Director General, as it is my first time to visit FAO head office. I would like also to seize this opportunity to thank the FAO for the wonderful arrangement you have done, especially to meet His Holiness, but also to have this discussion this afternoon. I would like to thank the FAO for the support it has provided to my country, Vanuatu, over the past years as well as the current ongoing programs. The FAO presence in Vanuatu is a true manifestation of its commitment towards the Pacific region. As you mentioned, I would like to thank the FAO for its financial and technical support towards the success of the Pacific Week of Agriculture, recently held in Port Vila, where we have the opportunity, have been honored by your presence and some of the FAO staff in Port Vila. I would like also to seek the FAO support on the following area. The climate resilience crops, in particular crops that have economic value, can generate revenue to the local farmers and vales that will ensure food security, especially post-disaster. But also in the capacity building, in data collections and analysis, with a special regard to monitoring and reporting on the implementation of the National Sustainable Development Plan, which is a nationalization of the SDGs at the global level, and to assist with forward planning, but also to provide support and assistance for accessible law, accessing Global Law Environment Fund and the Global Law Climate Fund through projects development, and to ensure funds secured use national established system. The other area is to ensure that there is a fair quota in the recruitment system in to the FAO in order to have a fair representation from member countries, and especially the Pacific regions in this organization. There is also a need for the FAO to ensure that the experts that is allocating to the Pacific regions have a wealth of expertise and familiar with the regional circumstances. The FAO should not send experts that have no experience of the region, as the Pacific should not be training ground, but the region that requires FAO to progress their agricultural issues and needs foods. We need real experts who knows very well the environment of our region, importantly at this point of time, that we have to change our traditional method to do and adopt new ways due to climate change. Vanuatu needs FAO technical support to mechanize and modernize its agricultural and agronomic sector. I used to say that before embarking, Vanuatu embarking on chain values, we need to produce, increase more our production. We need to produce more and enough to feed ourselves before any plan for export. Thank you, madam.
Thank you very much, Excellency Prime Minister. We took note of the need on working on climate resilience, on SDGs, on access to funds, namely the GEF and the Green Climate Fund, increasing the production, and I should say maybe nutritious production, because we talk on nutritious food, and also how we FAO should send experts with strong knowledge of the region. Now we continue our dialogue. Who would like to take the floor? Excellency George, the Vice President of Micronesia.
Thank you very much.
The floor.
Thank you very much. Let me first of all thank the Director General, FAO, and the staff for the excellent lunch. The problems that we have in the village of Micronesia are very similar to those that have been experienced or faced by other island countries. I would like to join President Hilda Heine here in requesting that FAO consider very favorably to have an office, a presence in the North Pacific. We also would like to have you review our laws and what we have on the ground and see how they can be improved. Illegal fishing or unregulated fishing activities in the FSM is a serious problem. We try to police the entire Pacific region that in the Federal State of Micronesia, and we still need some help. We're fortunate to have some donor countries assisting us in surveilling our fishing areas, but we still need some help. We would rely heavily on organizations like FAO to come and take a look at what we have and tell us how best we can improve them. We already have laws in the book. Enforcement is what we cannot do effectively. One area of problems I also heard being mentioned here is the NCDs, a very common problem throughout these islands. It's been declared as emergency, but very little actions have been taken to address them. I would like to learn also how successful others may have done in this area. And of course, the food security, climate change. Our islands are like others, summer low islands that easily salt water intrusion into the taro patch is very common. And damage or destroy the entire taro patch, you know, which the inhabitants are relying on. So if there is any experience that FAO may have based on their involvement in other areas, let us know. Sea level rise, of course, continue to be a problem. When we left Pohnpei, the capital of the Federation of Micronesia, the tide, unusually high, almost covered the airport. So if that continued to be the case, we are heading into a very serious problem. And we need some help. But again, organizations like FAO, with your expertise, if we can invite you to take a trip or consider establishing an office out there to help us. I also am interested in knowing how does an organization like FAO is supported financially. I'm not sure whether we're paying any dues into the organization or... We are, yeah? But anyway, these are some of the problems that I hope we all can work together, collaborate in ways that can address the problem that we do face. Thank you.
Thank you, Excellency Vice President, bringing again another very important point to the discussion on the non-communicable diseases. As we know, is a serious problem in the Pacific, not only in the Pacific, but is aggravated in the Pacific, bringing a heavy burden to the public sector with diabetics, hypertension, and also from the budget, which could be affected to the development. But also we took note on the need for action, the need for collaboration, and also your appeal to open an office in the North Pacific. Now, let's continue our discussion. Who would like to speak next? Papua New Guinea, you have the floor.
Thank you. Like other leaders who are here, I'd like to also acknowledge the good work that the FAO is doing, and Director General, first of all, let me thank you on behalf of my Prime Minister, who is not able to make it here because he had to attend the APEC Leaders Summit, and therefore sends his apology. But like the other leaders, like his colleagues, the leaders have already acknowledged the good work that FAO is doing in the region. And we can also see evidence of that in Papua New Guinea. But also let me thank you for this wonderful occasion and the lunch and the program, which my delegation appreciates very much. Also, let me acknowledge the presence of the other heads of states and governments, ministers, and also the Secretary General of the Forum, heads of crop organizations as well, who all contribute to the discussions and the role of FAO in the region. But food security is important. For Papua New Guinea, we look at this as part of the overall sustainable development efforts. It also counts on our efforts in WTO regime, the UNESCO regime, and other UN organizations. They all have a role to play. and FAO has its role as well. So sustainable development encroaches on a number of activities that the UN system and implementation agencies are also contributing to, assisting. So as far as Papua New Guinea is concerned, we see that the Bonn COP23, which Fiji is the presidency, is an important element contributing towards the sustainable development efforts. And therefore, what transpires from Bonn will be basically the rules book. This is writing up the rules for the full implementation of the Paris Agreement. And I'm happy to say that Papua New Guinea is one of the few Pacific states who is on the rules books committee. And we will be looking at ensuring that the interests of the region and, of course, our own national interests is also captured. But it's an important task. It's a big task. We have the people who can contribute in Papua New Guinea. We do have our national experts, but that's not enough. We will be looking at getting experts from other colleagues in the room as well as FAO and other UN organizations. So that is an important task for us, having the capacity to contribute meaningfully to writing the rules in the rules book for the full implementation of the Paris Agreement. So FAO, I believe, could play a role in this process. And the other areas that we are interested in is the mitigation and adaptation strategies. As you know, Papua New Guinea is a strong advocate of Red Plus, and we fought tooth and nails to make sure that it was captured in the Paris Agreement. And so we are pushing that through, and we want to make sure that those countries who have the oceans and who have the forests benefit from the economic gains that these resources would bring to them. So we'll be looking at that in this rules book analysis and write-up. And as I said, it's an important task for us, and we'll be looking at resources from other countries and organizations that might help us in this overall process. I thank you, Director General and Chair.
Thank you very much, Special Envoy. We took note of your call for strong partnership to support towards implementation of the Paris Agreement and also on mitigation adaptation strategies. And you refer very much on the need of having a strong and call upon partnership. And we have with us in the home Australia, New Zealand, and the Pacific Forum. They are members, Australia and New Zealand are members of the Pacific Islands Forum, but they are also major development partners in the region. I will start with New Zealand, followed by Australia, and then the Pacific Islands Forum.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So my name is James Shore. I'm the Minister for Climate Change, and with me is Alpita Williams-Seal, who's the Minister for Pacific Island Peoples of New Zealand. So we've sent two ministers to this meeting and to Bonn, the Climate Minister and the Minister for Pacific Communities as well, because we recognise this particular COP and this meeting as well today, the particular focus on the Pacific. Really support the dialogue between the FAO and the Pacific Islands when it comes to food security, nutrition, climate change. We welcome that. Recognise, as you said at the beginning, it's not an easy one given the logistics that are involved in that for the islands in particular, but also that the FAO isn't hugely present or hasn't been as present in the Pacific, and that it is just starting, or it's in its sort of early days, and it's good to see how that's ongoing. So recognise the efforts that you're going to overcome the barriers of distance and logistics that are involved in that. I think New Zealand recognises that the link between climate change and food security and nutrition issues in the food and the agricultural system, and that it flows in both ways. In our own case, New Zealand's economy is heavily dependent on the agricultural sector. We're a major food producer, and as a result of that, biological emissions and emissions from the agricultural sector account for almost half of our greenhouse gas emissions as well. So the two are inextricably linked to each other, and so we're putting quite a lot of effort into working out how to both become more productive but also lower emissions at the same time. We also recognise that the 1.5 degree temperature rise target is the only safe, it's not even safe, but the target that represents the best hope of the islands of being able to stay intact into the future. And so to that end, and our intention at Bonn at COP23 will be to announce a new target for New Zealand of becoming a carbon neutral country by the year 2050, which we believe is our best contribution to being able to maintain the global temperature rise to, or limit that temperature rise to 1.5 degrees. For our own sakes, as much as the Pacific, because we are also a Pacific island and we are also affected by this. Māori people of New Zealand were heavily oriented around the shores and around fishing. Marae and many of our communities are based very close to sea level and so are at risk. But even other effects, like we're seeing increasing droughts, storms, fires like aren't seen anywhere except in Australia, are starting to crop up in New Zealand now as well. And the worst drought that we had recently was in 2013, wiped $1.5 billion off our agricultural exports. So it's representing a significant threat to us, and we know that the impacts of that are already beginning to bite ourselves as well as our Pacific Island neighbours. And so the new government, of which William and I are members, are greatly committed to increasing New Zealand's ambition in terms of what we do around climate change, but also not just the mitigation of making sure that we reduce our own domestic greenhouse gas emissions, but also that we place much greater focus on adaptation, in particular around food security and so on, at home and with our neighbours. And I also just wanted to mention, seeing as it's come up in this meeting, that this new government also has on its to-do list bringing in the Sustainable Development Goals as a way of measuring our success as a government and as a country as well. So we are bringing those things into line over the course of the new government. I just wanted to briefly hand it to my colleague William to see if you'd like to say a few things.
Good afternoon, everybody, and I want to acknowledge Your Excellencies, Director General, and the leaders from the Pacific region. I was a bit reluctant to go first because my elder from the Cook Island hasn't said anything yet, but happy to take up this opportunity.
Save the best to last.
I believe as a Minister of the New Zealand Government of Pacific Heritage, I provide a unique perspective in these regards. One, because I represent the people of New Zealand, but two, because of my roots in the Pacific, and because we have a sizable Pacific population in New Zealand who still call the islands of the Pacific home, I think I can do that. And I think our purpose here of both the Minister of Climate Change and myself as Minister of Pacific Island Affairs sends a very strong and powerful message of support to the Pacific region. And it is our intention that as the new government of New Zealand, that not only will we be looking to take a stronger, more active leadership role in climate change internally as well as globally, but we also want to give confidence to the forum that we want to work closely with the forum and collaboratively to stand in solidarity with the needs of the Pacific. I've had personal experience, Your Excellency. I've visited many of these islands, not only my home, but other islands, to see for myself what was happening as a direct consequence of global warming and rising sea levels. And many of what has already been said, I can vouch, I've seen it with my own eyes. And I don't think there's any harm of us repeating the same thing over and over again until the rest of the world recognises the urgency and how serious climate change is threatening food security in the Pacific region. I think once upon a time as a little kid, food sources for the Pacific, natural food sources, was either you get it from the sea, get it from the land, or you get it from the air. But nowadays, all those sources have been threatened. And so you not only had the food sources, the natural food sources being slowly destroyed as the years go by, the seas, unregulated, illegal fishing, and for most small island states, it's an impossible task to try and enforce their fishing rights, enforce their economic zones. And whilst FAO may not directly have a role in that, so I think there is a real need to support the Pacific region, and no doubt the work that the Director General of Pacific Island Fishing is about making sure that those rights are protected for the sake of ensuring that the food source from the sea are protected. We notice also that in land use, sir, there's already internal migration in some of the small atolls. And as those people leave the outer islands and propagate in the main island, there's real pressure been put on that because there just isn't enough land. And not only that, it's the debate about building houses, making land available for that, or building food, or where's the space for the rubbish, particularly if you're reliant on imported food. And imported food comes with other problems in terms of tin cans and plastics, all which harm the natural lands. And so there's, you know, the warming of sea levels, as you well know, sir, is destroying the ecosystems and destroying the natural sources of seafood that many of these islands rely upon on a day-to-day basis. We've noticed also that as a result of the imported food, and we see this in our country, where there is poverty, there's a tendency towards fatty, cheaper, imported food products, unhealthy food products. And that in itself generates this whole cycle of other diseases and other unhealthy things that come with it. So I just want to basically reaffirm that what you've heard from the Pacific leaders is true, and it isn't going to get easy. It will get worse. And from my experience, sir, having spoken to our people in New Zealand, but also visiting the region, there is a real sense of urgency about it all. And I think, I often think about the fact that there are projects happening around the region as to the value of the projects, whether it is achieving what we're setting out to do, and that is making sure that food is accessible. And so I want to reiterate, sir, that I think both my colleague and I is to provide that strong message. Yep, we're serious about climate change. We're going to do our bit, but also we really want to be able to support and work collaboratively in partnership ways around the region, because after all, I like the concept, one Pacific blue continent. That's a continent that I think needs to be acknowledged. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you very much, ministers from New Zealand, for strengthening the sense of urgency, the need of solidarity with the Pacific Islands suffering from the direct consequence of climate change and its impact on food security and nutrition, and reminding us that the seeds, they are large ocean states, and we need to take care of the oceans, we need to preserve the oceans to have a sustainable future, and also the impacts of imported cheap and fatty food, which are unhealthy. And this, I would like to maybe to remind you that FAO, with the Pacific, all the islands and the Pacific, we prepared the Global Action Program on Food Security and Nutrition in Small Island Development States, which was launched this year in July, and we are now moving towards implementation. And we would like to call upon you to be the champions of this Global Action Program. Now, I would like to move to the Ambassador Gregory Alain French, the permanent representative of Australia to FAO, to say some words. Thank you, Ambassador.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Excellencies, distinguished delegates, ladies and gentlemen, I'd first like to thank, through you, Director General De Silva and all of your colleagues for having made possible this high-level event on the occasion of the visit to Rome of distinguished leaders from the Pacific Islands Forum. I think it's further evidence of the valuable support that the FAO is providing to our part of the world, particularly to Pacific Island states. In recent years, the FAO has increased its resources and sharpened its focus on the Pacific, a trend which we very much appreciate and look forward to see continuing. The Pacific faces, of course, a complex array of challenges that impact on nutrition and food security, and we've heard many of them raised already: climate change and natural disasters, fluctuations in the availability and price of food imports, rapid population growth and growing urbanisation, and increased pressure on arable land. As we've also talked about, Pacific Island countries also face the complex double burden of malnutrition, suffering from both under- and overnutrition. In the context of these complex challenges, there are two points on partnerships that I'd like to encourage this forum to consider. One, that regional cooperation is critical to tackling climate and nutrition challenges in the Pacific, and that it's important to consider and work with the full range of partners and combinations of partners to come up with solutions to climate and nutrition challenges in the Pacific. In that context, the Pacific Week of Agriculture, held in Port Vila last month, was a great example of this Pacific regional cooperation. And of course, we thank you, Madam Chair, for having participated directly in this initiative. It involved governments, donors, regional and international organisations coming together to coordinate their priorities in agriculture. It was a joint initiative of the FAO and the Pacific community, and the first time these important organisations had held joint meetings with the agriculture and forestry ministers of the Pacific. And both climate and nutrition were a focus of discussion during the week. We are looking forward to shaping our own aid programs in the Pacific to better align with these regional efforts to build resilience in the agricultural sector and to share learnings and improve our collaboration. One of the important contributions that we in Australia are making is building on the work done by the Australian Centre for International Agricultural Research. The findings of their research across the region present real opportunities to address some of the vulnerabilities inherent in Pacific agricultural and fisheries systems. Importantly, as the Director General had said, as Deputy Prime Minister Fiamie of Samoa had said, Vice President George of Federated States of Micronesia had mentioned the importance of fisheries. And in that context, the Port State Measures Agreement, which is a great initiative of the FAO and which we strongly support and have ratified, can indeed play an important role in helping to tackle illegal, unregulated and unreported fishing. And, of course, in our part of the world, we have recently brought into reality the New Aid Treaty Subsidiary Agreement, which will enable us to use to pool our resources, our surveillance and enforcement resources across our countries, but also use new ways of surveillance enforcement, remote sensing, satellites, remote and pilotless aerial vehicles to commence and maintain surveillance and enforcement and reduce the costs of surveillance enforcement for all countries, having in consideration of the vast exclusive economic zones we have to surveil. Australia is a strong partner with Pacific Island nations through the climate funds, our investment in the Global Environment Facility, amounting to $441 million since 1991, are improving biodiversity, regenerating degraded land, and protecting international waters. We've also committed $200 million to the Green Climate Fund, making us the 10th largest donor globally. And perhaps more importantly, our Deputy Secretary of Foreign Affairs and Trade, Mr. Ewan MacDonald, has served as co-chair of the Green Climate Fund for 3 of the past 5 years, and we have used this opportunity to ensure the Global Climate Fund benefits reach Pacific Island countries that are grappling with the impacts of climate change. Partnerships like this allow us to achieve scale and improve effectiveness by leveraging a wide range of expertise, creativity, networks, and resources. And churches, non-governmental organisations, the private sector and civil society are key development partners all together, and we need to engage with these important and valuable partners in order to address the Pacific climate and food security challenges. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much, Ambassador, for calling upon a better partnership, more regional cooperation, working throughout the full range of partners, and how we can improve collaboration. Also, reminding us that Australia is a donor of the Green Climate Fund. Australia has the chair of the Green Climate Fund and is benefiting Pacific Islands. Maybe here I can inform you that FAO has been since last year accredited by the Green Climate Fund, and we are supporting countries formulating projects to be submitted to the Green Climate Fund, and is for sure another area where we can better collaborate with the Pacific states here represented. Now I would like to give the floor to the Director General of the Secretariat of the Pacific Community.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Leaders, ladies and gentlemen, I'm mindful that this is a discussion for the leaders with FAO, and I'll make my remarks very brief. Firstly, on the NCD crisis, I'm not sure people here appreciate that it's actually worse than what has been thrown around. At least four... maybe more islands of our region have a declining life expectancy at birth. If anything, several countries are showing a plateauing of life expectancy at birth. And we have good reason to believe that this is due to NCDs. But we're not a region that's passive and dependent and a group of victims. I want to share with you on the NCD front, in 2014 we developed and had endorsed at a combined meeting of the Ministers of Finance and Ministers of Health in the Pacific, never been done anywhere else in the world, what we call the Pacific NCD Roadmap. And it has four things. Evidence-based, tax tobacco to at least 70% of the retail price, tax unhealthy food items, invest more in the health systems of the Pacific, and make sure that drugs that have been shown to be cost-effective are consistently available for the treatment of diabetes, heart disease, and so on. And I'm pleased to say, actually, that we're making good progress in the region. The challenge we have is to have all of our members follow the roadmap, follow it consistently and with some urgency, because we are already seeing some encouraging signs. 10 of our members already tax soft drinks. Several developed nations have not taken that action, even though we've seen the evidence. So here's a good example of the Pacific region taking on and, in fact, leading in the area of NCD. It is a problem, without a doubt, but we're dealing with it as best we can. On the issue of climate change, I was fortunate to be part of the dinner hosted generously by the Australian government last night and listened to Monsignor or the senior representative from the Vatican, where he made the point, rightly, I think, that the issue of climate change is no longer a scientific and technical debate. That's history. Yes, there's some refinements to be made in specific areas of science. This is now a moral and ethical issue for leaders of the world. This is why I commend Dame Taylor and the leaders of the Pacific for engaging probably the highest individual with the moral authority on the planet as a potential ally for the Pacific nations in this discussion. And so I think, and I commend the leaders for taking that action. Again, I want to illustrate that we're not a helpless, passive, dependent group of small islands. We are taking action, and decisive action, I might add, in a number of these important areas. On the just a point about climate change, I think it's fantastic the focus on oceans and the meeting in New York. I would like to suggest to our leaders to think about land use. We have very little land, and in some islands being claimed by the sea. I think there's probably a worthwhile effort to look at the issue of land availability, of use, soil fertility. And this is where I'm looking to FAO as a potential partner with SPC on assisting the members to look more closely on the issue of land. Without a doubt, the ocean is the big one. But, you know, food security for us in the Pacific is both a land and sea issue. And I think to bring that balance, we should consider a focused discussion around land and land use. Just finally, Director General and colleagues, on the issue of partnerships. Partnerships, of course, is a two-way street. Respectful, effective partnerships is a two-way street. And in the Pacific, we know a lot about our region. We've been playing this game for 47 years. And we might pat ourselves on the back for a successful inaugural Pacific Agriculture Week held jointly in Vanuatu with FAO. But one could ask the question, why has it taken us so long? I think it's fair to say that we could be more efficient in the use of the taxpayers' funds entrusted to us. Director General, you made mention of the trials in Zanzibar, I think, on sea cucumbers. You know, we've been doing the same in Kiribati. Why? Why have we not worked together on learning from what you've done as opposed to us trying to reinvent the wheel? In other words, I think there's more to be gained by a respectful, focused discussion on where we can learn from each other and where we can both support our members efficiently and effectively, as opposed to this clunky, ad hoc relationship we have had in the past. And I make this statement with the greatest respect to FAO, because it's more a reflection of the nature of the relationship between the regional organizations in the Pacific and the wider UN family. I just think there's something to be gained by us being much more efficient, much more respectful about what we do and how we do things, and where we can efficiently support our members. We know a thing or two about the small islands of the Pacific, and you have a lot of technical and normative experience. Rather than doubling up on these things, let's be efficient. And that's really my plea for the day. But let me say thank you again for this opportunity to be part of this discussion. The Pacific is leading in many respects. in the areas that we're talking about. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Director General, for calling us to a better, more efficient partnership to respond and to support the members towards their needs, and bringing back the discussion on NCDs and calling upon FAO to work with the Pacific on land use, which is an important issue also for food security, because is land and sea contributing to food security in the region. But maybe regarding partnership, I'd like to say and to that during the Pacific Week of Agriculture, I had a very close discussion with your deputy, Audrey. She was there, and together we organized the Pacific Week, and we agreed to fine-tune to see how we can support together the Pacific Islands in a more integrated way, instead of coming separately, but how we can, and maybe an idea for us to have a letter of agreement, of memorandum of understanding. I leave it and under the support of my Director General. Now we have, okay, thank you. To conclude the debate, we have Ambassador Delphine Bourion, Ambassador of France to FAO and to Italy. Ambassador, you have the floor. Thank you.
Merci beaucoup. Je suis très heureuse de vous avoir écouté. Je n'avais pas prévu de prendre la parole. Je vous laisse aussi prendre les écouteurs. Voilà, je n'avais pas prévu de prendre la parole, mais je souhaitais néanmoins joindre ma voix à ce qui a été dit par les orateurs précédents sur trois points rapides. D'abord, pour exprimer la solidarité de la France dans tous ces enjeux que nous avons mentionnés. La France est un partenaire très actif dans le Pacifique, avec ses trois territoires, et le président de la Polynésie française, M. Édouard Fritsch, malheureusement a dû partir, mais également avec la Nouvelle-Calédonie et Wallis et Futuna. Et nous sommes en effet très impliqués dans toutes les organisations régionales de coopération. Et moi-même, j'avais eu l'honneur, quand j'ai eu mon premier travail au ministère des Affaires étrangères, de représenter la France au programme régional océanien pour l'environnement, ce qui m'avait donné la joie de venir plusieurs fois dans cette magnifique région, à Nouméa et à Apia également. Mon deuxième point, c'est la solidarité avec l'urgence climat. Et je crois qu'on ne le peut pas trop le dire. Les États du Pacifique sont tous confrontés à une urgence absolue, celle des changements climatiques, et nous devons tout faire pour les aider à affronter ces défis. C'est aussi pour cela que la France a eu cette implication aussi tellement forte sur les changements climatiques avec l'accord de Paris et a toujours été très sensible justement à la question des États insulaires. Troisième point, c'est le rôle de la FAO, bien sûr, et j'ai entendu l'appel que de nombreux États du Pacifique vous ont adressé, Monsieur le Directeur Général, pour bénéficier de votre expertise, pour aussi avoir des systèmes agricoles plus durables qui participent à la fois à l'adaptation au changement climatique et à l'atténuation. Dernier point, ce sont les partenariats. Et je crois qu'il est extrêmement utile de pouvoir toujours travailler dans un cadre régional qui permet en effet ces échanges de bonnes pratiques entre des États qui ont des ensembles qui ont problématiques similaires et le rôle que vous pouvez jouer en effet avec la FAO et que nous soutenons de pouvoir favoriser ces échanges pour pouvoir, avec l'expertise que vous apportez, développer des moyens de résilience plus importants. Et je crois que c'est tout à fait votre rôle et nous vous encourageons. Je vous remercie.
Merci, Madame l'Ambassadeur, pour tous les encouragements à la FAO pour favoriser les échanges et des moyens de résilience entre les pays du Pacifique et tout le support que la France pourra apporter à la FAO. Merci. And now I have the James Movic, the deputy director. I cannot see clearly the name of your organization. Pacific Fisheries, I think Fisheries and Oceans has been a very highly in the discussion today, and it will be important to listen from you how you see this cooperation with FAO and how important we can collaborate. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Deputy Director General, and my respects also to Director General Graziano Silva. Honourable Excellencies, my name is James Movic. I'm the Director General of the Pacific Island Forum Fisheries Agency. We've been in existence since 1978. And the organization was established by the Pacific leaders even before the Law of the Sea Convention, the Third Law of the Sea Convention, had been completed. And it was established by the Pacific Island leaders in recognition that the Pacific had the opportunity through the extension of the 200-mile zones to gain management and the utilization of the vast tuna resources of the region, which would be their largest natural, renewable natural resource. And so the Pacific has had a very strong and long history of cooperation and effective management over the tuna resources of the Western Central Pacific Ocean. And it has been based on two fundamental factors, the first of which is the assertion of zone rights-based management by the countries of the Western Central Pacific, where even with regard to the highly migratory species such as tuna, the countries of the Pacific region have asserted their right of management over those resources within the 200-mile zones, and the capability to cooperate in the management of those resources within their zones, and through that effective management of in-zone resources, to then call on the Regional Fisheries Management Organization, in accordance with the UN Fish Stocks Agreement, to adopt compatible measures for the management of those same resources in the high seas. And if I may say so, we in the Pacific have a record of which we can be very successful in terms of our assertion of our management rights and of our conservation, the effectiveness of conservation management of those resources compared to other developing countries or other tuna regions in the world, and certainly compared to the manner in which the tuna resources are managed on the high seas, even within our region, where the unfortunately the Regional Fisheries Management Organization has not been as effective in terms of developing the consensus necessary for effective management over those the tuna in those areas. So, for example, we've all been talking about IUU. And yes, it is a big problem. It's a big problem globally, and it's a problem within the region. But I think we must be careful to place the problem in the Pacific in its correct context. And we had a study based on 15 years of data that we have been collecting and operational experience we have been collecting in terms of addressing IUU in the region. And out of that, we found that no more than 4% of the IUU activity in the region, in our region, is probably attributable to purely illegal boats. That is not a major problem within our region. Rather, 52% of the problem is to do with verification of catches or compliance of boats with all of their catch reporting requirements. The other fundamental area of concern, 42%, are post-harvest violations, and these are primarily to do with our inability to verify transshipments of tuna that is being caught or transshipped on the high seas. It is the failure of effective management in the high seas that is causing a significant problem for the Pacific. Now, I do want to come on to the Port State Management Agreement, because I realize that this is something that has been considered very important by FAO and by other members in the international community. But again, one must put in context the capability of the Pacific Island countries to truly implement the rather prescriptive and what can be quite onerous requirements of the current PSMA in small island administrations that have very limited capacity. And we have been making this point as a region for a number of years through the Port State Management negotiation process, as well as since its signing and coming into effect. What we are looking for in the region is to have a measure that will have the same objectives as the post-state management agreement. It is something that we certainly all want to work to in the future. But I just spent last week with the senior fisheries officers of the region, which is why they probably haven't had the opportunity to brief their heads of delegation here, discussing, amongst other things, this very issue of the application of post-state management arrangements. And given the onerous burden that would probably be imposed on the small island developing states, their preference is that we will seek a measure within the Western Central Pacific Fisheries Commission, a port state management measure that will take into account the realities of the Pacific, take into account the MCS procedures that we already have in place in the Pacific, take into account the form of legal fisheries management regime that we have in the Pacific, and is something that we know that we can truly implement effectively. Because our problem, one of our problems is if we go with too onerous an arrangement and we fail to comply with all of its aspects, then what happens to our exports? Is the European Union, for example, going to then deem our non-compliance with full implementation of the PSMA as a means to yellow card us again for market access? So we've got to be very realistic. If we take on obligations, they must be obligations that we can implement effectively. And so this is not a case where necessarily one size fits all. In the context of the tuna fisheries in the Western Central Pacific, where you do have clearly a very successful and robust system of monitoring, control, and surveillance and fisheries management, tuna fisheries management, we've called on the FAO, and I would certainly like to continue to work with the FAO to try and find a solution that works in the best interests of our members. I think it is instructive that the countries that have been able to sign the PSMA at the present time within the Pacific are not really the largest of our transshipment port states. And we commend them for doing that, because obviously if they are able to satisfy all the requirements, that's good. But the other small island countries that do have tremendous amounts of transshipment in their ports have already indicated a very strong concern at being forced to or pressured into undertaking these onerous requirements without the capability. We at the Foreign Fisheries Agency spend a lot of time supporting even those parties that have signed the PSMA in helping them to make the adjustments that they have to. It is not yet a complete process, and so we will work on that. Now, I don't want to sound so negative. I appreciate what FAO is doing. We certainly want to work with you. But I think we must take into account the fact that we do have effective management measures in the Pacific. It is not, as Dame Meg said at the outset, we are not a vacuum. As my colleague Colin has said, we are not helpless. We have been doing things for ourselves and quite effectively for many years now. FAO and other international organizations need to come in and work with us based on the reality of our region, not necessarily of the perception of other regions around the world, but certainly, and we are very willing to work with you in this. And one of the areas, before I need to stop,
excuse me,
I realize time is going.
We have to close.
But my last area, if I could, Madam Deputy, is the area of maritime boundaries. And here FAO has been doing some work, and we've been very happy to work with the FAO in this one. Maritime boundaries is, again, an existential issue for us, because as sea level rises, the problem is what happens to our national boundaries in the event of sea level rise overcoming our baselines. And this is an area where, unfortunately, as far as the legal advice I've been given, there is no clear, definitive answer under the third UNCLOS as to what happens to a country's maritime borders if their baselines are submerged by sea level rise. And for a number of our countries, that is a very, very real threat. So I certainly would welcome the opportunity to work with FAO in this area, as we would continue to welcome the opportunity to work with FAO and the international community in developing a port state measure that is truly suitable for the countries, the small island developing states of the Pacific.